Hello, everyone, and welcome to minute 65 of season 10 of Movie Around Minute, the Daily Podcast, where we hijack our way through the 1974 action thriller, The Taking of Pelham 123, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me one final time this week are the daughter father duo of Cassie and Joe Tura. Welcome back to the show, guys.
Thank you
so much, Rob. Thank you. Thank you for having us this week.
Yes, thank you so much. This has been a lot of fun.
Yeah, for me too. It's been great. It's really been great. So we'll have to do this again in the future.
Yes.
Maybe
I'll invite you back for a future season. We'll see.
Sounds good. Cassie has some good ideas for you to do for future seasons.
Oh yeah, but I'll tell you later.
Okay. We'll keep them secret. Yes. All right, so minute 65 begins with shots still ringing out as someone calls for a ceasefire and ends with Gray complaining. Why not?
Big shock, yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. So we ended things off yesterday in the middle of a firefight. Someone let off a round and actually was able to hit Brown, and that just got the ball rolling, and everything just got out of control from there. So this minute continues with a few shots still ringing out, and then we hear a police officer scream, "Hold your fire, God damn it!" All right, Joe, take a drink.
Ooh, take a shot.
Take a shot.
Yes, there. Definitely.
Yes.
Shot of Seagram's.
That's right. And what's very interesting is they give us a bunch of shots of various characters that are in different places. And some of them, I mean, like, obviously all the hostages, they're all scared on the ground. They're obviously all on the ground of the train, except for the drunk woman, who isn't slouched anymore because she's sitting up straight. You know, so, yeah, I don't know. A little strange. But, you know, we see Tweedledum and Tweedledee hiding in the middle of the track. We even see James looks a little scared. And, you know, we know why James is scared. James is scared because he thinks he's going to get shot. He's getting shot in the back, not in the front.
He almost did. That's almost did, as I remember. That shot rang right in that pillar he was hiding behind.
Well, you know, he is using his finger gun. So, you know, I can't really.
True.
You know, they wanted to make sure that he didn't get a shot off on that finger gun.
That's right.
A very deadly finger gun that Patrolman James has there. And then we get a shot from behind of the train in the distance, just sitting there, and then we hear Blue screams quiet, and then he looks over at he goes, "Are you all right?" And he goes, "Yeah, I'm not too bad." And he goes, I think it went right through. So again, he's, you know, we see that Blue is still concerned about his men, you know, making sure that everything works right. And then we hear him say, "Okay, move back. Come on, move back." And then he turns to one of the hostages and goes, "Hey, give me that scarf. Give me that scarf." And then he screams, keep quiet. Okay. And Brown acknowledges and goes, "Yeah, I don't feel pain too much." And then Blue wants information. He goes, "How many shots?" And he goes, "Just one. The rest was me." And then they answered, "I didn't see anybody. I just got mad."
Yeah.
So I like the way that this goes. And Joe, get ready for a shot. And then he says, "God damn it."
Yeah.
No, but I like the way that Blue's initial instinct here is to make sure that he knows what exactly happened here.
Mm.
You know, he's not looking to blame. He's not. He first wants firsthand information from Brown what happened. Because you know he's someone who we know he's a soldier of fortune, so we know that he's someone who is very familiar with dealing with firefights. And basically, what it comes down to here is that he wants to make sure that he has all the facts before he needs to make some sort of very ultimate decision, which will be happening next week. You know, when he has to basically deal with okay, how do we move forward in this situation? Hmm. So, you know, I like the way that he calmly is getting information from Blue. You know, not asking anybody else. He said, Blue, okay, how many shot? One shot. Yeah. And then I got mad and just started shooting all around. I mean, I got to say, I'm very, I guess, impressed that throughout all the shooting that he did, he didn't hit anybody, which means that all the cops were hitting really well. And the two cops on the track, that's pretty amazing that neither of them got hit by anything going
on. Yeah. It could be that Brown's just a terrible shot. I mean, but he was just firing blind anyway. So.
No, but even you're firing blind if there are that many cops around there.
You would think you'd hit one. Yeah.
Exactly, you'd hit something, not just the you know, not just the beams around in the tunnel. But maybe this is for dramatic effect. I think it would have been a little too much if he actually like mowed down a bunch of cops. You know, just by shooting.
Randomly. If they remade it today, he would. Yeah.
Yeah, he would have taken grenades. He would have taken out a rocket launcher.
Yeah.
You know, he wouldn't have sufficed with just shooting a full clip into you know, into the area. And you know, obviously it's a movie clip, so therefore he has you know, as many bullets as he needs in it. So that makes sense.
Exactly.
Of course.
Yeah. Well, that's the way these things work. And then Blue continues his investigation, and he goes, "Mr. Gray." And then Gray just looks at him, and Gray, you know. He's getting ready to take aim once again, and he goes, "Hey, you don't think they're finished out there, do you?" And he calmly says, "Go back there and help Mr. Green, will you, please?" And Gray complies, and basically, some Girl Scout chicken outfit, I'm in here.
I love that.
Yeah, it's an interesting comment to make. No question about that.
And what's he going to help Green do? Hide? Because Green's kind of hiding anyway.
I think the idea is go to the back of the go to the front of the train which is farther away from everywhere else. I think that's what it comes down to.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Like putting him in like timeout.
More or less. Well, again, he knows that he can't trust him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think that's why he got all the information from Brown. If it was the other way around, if it was Gray, he just would have like smacked him or something. At least Brown, he knows, is a little more level-headed, sort of. So at least he can like get the info from him and have a conversation.
Right. No, again, he knows who's dealing with here. I mean, we've talked about this a lot. You know that you've read the book, so you might have a clearer memory of it than I do. If the book explains how these four got together, do you remember if it does?
I don't really remember because I read the book. I think it took me like 2 hours to read the book. It was one of those like super page turners from the 70s, and it just was so good. But I only read it the one time, and it's somewhere in my garage. The only thing I really remember from the book is that the undercover cop had a much bigger role.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Like he gets a ton of pages. So I don't remember too many specifics, but I do remember loving it. I'll have to find it when I clean out my garage one of these days and reread it.
Okay. Fair enough. Because again, it you know, I've constantly wondered, and I've talked about this about every week, you know, how these four got together. You know, is Blue the mastermind behind everything, or is there a Reservoir Dogs type of Joe, not Joe Turner, that's you know, that, or maybe
I hope
maybe, a, maybe a Joe Turner.
I'm not saying
that's behind. I know, please don't. that's behind everything. You know, that's financing everything. That's financing the whole thing. You know, that type of thing. So I don't know.
I think it's Blue. Yeah.
Because they don't seem to me that they mesh very well together.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's almost like he just went to Craigslist and got, you know, the hired guns.
Exactly.
And,
they you know, the,
yeah.
This isn't planned well from that perspective. You know, the various parts of these characters are not put together properly. Again, we're not meant to know the real connection between any of them, but but
it
most,
is interesting to
in
think
most
about,
heist
though.
Movies, you get an idea as to how they all got together, and here there's no way. You don't have any clue, and that's what obviously is causing a lot of the tension. And you know, spoiler alert, and that's what's going to cause also the downfall.
Yeah.
Yes.
The fact that Blue can't trust Gray. That's what it comes down to, ultimately.
It adds to the fun, though.
Oh, for sure. I love this movie. I'm not besmirching it at all. But when you look at it, when you try to look at it from a rational perspective, it just doesn't make sense how these guys get together.
No.
That's what it comes down to.
That's
the thing that surprises me. So
that's an excellent point.
So he mentions the Girl Scouts. So what do either of you know about the Girl Scouts?
Cookies.
That they sell great cookies.
Yes.
Okay, I don't think
Girl Scouts
Mr. Gray is talking about the cookies, but maybe. You never know.
The Girl Scouts have been around since what? Oh my gosh, turn of the century at least, right? I would think.
The turn of which
we never got. Oh yeah, that's a good point. Sorry,
yeah,
I'm thinking
just
1970s.
I have that problem also when I think of things. Yeah. I still think, you know, we're in the 1900s.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be early 1900s at least. I mean,
yeah,
I know
probably around.
Yeah, Cassie was never in the Girl Scouts.
I was not. I don't think that would be my thing.
No,
that's
it would not.
Not something I would particularly like.
Okay, so
you didn't like uniforms from school, so yeah.
I know. Right. Wearing a uniform for my extracurricular? No.
All right.
So the Girl Scouts was a youth organization for girls that was founded in 1912 by Juliet Gordon Lowe in Savannah, Georgia. And its stated mission was to build girls of courage, confidence, and character to help make the world a better place. Their first organized meeting was on March 12, 1912, where they gathered 18 girls for the first ever Girl Guide Troop meeting. Huh. And they renamed it the following year the Girl Scouts, which probably sounds a little better than the Girl Guide.
Yeah, a little easier to say, too.
That's true also. That's right. Right. So, as you said, they have all these different awards that they give them, and obviously they are mostly known for their cookies. They have six different levels. You have daisies, brownies, juniors, cadets, seniors, and ambassadors.
Interesting.
Yeah, and each one of those is basically for two grades. So you have, K through 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 8, 9, 10, and 11, 12. The way they split it up with the whole thing.
That's an investment of time. Time.
Yes. We don't have any more time. Yeah. And, that's the way that this minute ends. We're going to have to see how Blue is going to react next week to this whole situation. So, did you have anything else you want to say about this particular minute?
Just more disapproving looks from Blue. He almost feels like he thinks he's a babysitter, especially with Gray.
I think he does feel that way. Because again, he doesn't want things to go out of, he wants to stay in control and make sure that everything goes as planned. But Gray,
exactly, yeah.
Gray doesn't care about that.
Nope. Yeah. He's more off the cuff and let's get the action going. Yeah. And Blue, you could tell Blue is super annoyed that this happened. So yeah.
Yeah.
This is not part of the plan.
Nope, not at all. Because again, spoiler alert, I mean, he doesn't want to kill people. You know, he just wants to get the money and that's it. If he needs to kill people, then he's willing to do that. But that's not his goal. I think Gray's goal is, okay, let's hope they don't agree so that we can kill people.
Yeah, because it's fun for him, yeah.
Yeah. It's a little too much fun for him. I would agree with that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Definitely.
Right. All right, so do either of you have anything you want to say about the movie in general? You know, and Joe, remember our time is limited.
Yes. good point. I'll just say two quick things. One is, it's weird that in all 5 minutes we get now the David Shire score is one of the best scores of the 70s by far.
Yes.
We don't get any music in any of these 5 minutes.
Nope.
None. Nope. Which I didn't realize till like the third time I watched the 5 minutes again. I was like, holy cow, I couldn't believe we got no music. I mean, everybody knows the main title theme, but my favorite part is when they're assembling the money, there's a long string of score, and it's just great.
Yes.
And it goes along with, like, it gets quiet and chaotic again. And on the Blu-ray that I watched the interview with him, and he said that the score was, where is it? Controlled music that sounded chaotic. That was what he was going for. Wow. And I was like, that is just perfect.
Yes.
So, yeah, it was an excellent interview. It's like 6.5 minutes. So good.
Wow. So, I mean, we discussed it a few weeks ago when they were talking about when they were dealing with the money, how it was great that every time that the money was on screen, there was the music got faster.
You know? Yeah.
And then the scene would change and they'd stop the music. And then you'd go back and the music's back. It's like playing musical chairs. You know, it just stops. Yeah. And like, where do you stand? Where?
Yeah. Yeah. So well done. Like, great editing, everything too. And my second thing was, you know, Leonard Maltin's movie guide, which back in the day when I worked for Penguin Books, that was the movie Bible. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was like IMDb, the print edition.
Right.
And every year we would get it. We would get we worked for the company, so we would get the new books. Even when I moved on from Penguin Books to Columbia House, we still had one guy that still worked there send us the new copies when Leonard Maltin's movie guide came out. So I have the last edition was the 2010. And one of my favorite reviews in the book, we'd always look up the new movies we saw that we loved each year. It was like, oh my God, what did Leonard Maltin say? But still, Taking Pelham 1-3 is one of my favorite reviews. And I got to read it really quick. He gives it 3.5 stars.
That's it.
But
screw that Maltin.
Well, out of four, yeah.
I know.
But I actually got to meet Leonard Maltin twice, and he signed the book risers that you'd see in the bookstores. And the first time he wrote, "Here I am, immortalized in cardboard." And then the second time, 2 years later, I asked him if he remembered, and he just wrote down. He goes, "Of course I remember. It's great to sign again." So he was so cool.
Wow.
But he says, "Ruthless Shaw and three cohorts hijack New York City subway train, hold passengers for $1 million in cash to be delivered in 1 hour." And here's where Maltin nails it. Outstanding thriller laced with cynical comedy, bursts with heart-stopping excitement, terrific performances, and first-rate editing. Crackerjack Peter Stone screenplay greatly improves John Godey's bestseller, pulsating score by David Shire. It's like, just in like those 8 lines, he just nails it. And still, one of my favorite reviews in this book. So,
wow, very cool. Yeah. But what does he say about the remake? If that was 2010.
I think he just puts remade for TV in 1998. He didn't even bother reviewing it. So, yeah.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. All right. Thank you very much for those very interesting tidbits. I appreciate that. So every Friday we have a segment called the Fun City Friday. Now, you being a New Yorker, have you ever heard the term Fun City besides on this podcast?
I mean, I have.
Okay.
Growing up in the 70s, definitely. Yes.
I did not know that until Dad told me.
Okay, good. I'm glad I'm glad on the one hand that you have heard of it, because it's not something that I just made up. And on the other hand, you know, it's nice also that Cassie learned something new. Yeah, like many of the guests. That's okay. I learned. I didn't know about it until I was doing research, trying to find something with alliteration to fit here. So.
That worked out pretty well.
All right, so we will once again do this snake fashion.
Cassie goes first. Mm-hmm. All right, so I have one quick little honorable mention, because it's not, I can't call it a New York movie, but the first like 10 minutes takes place in New York, and that's Crazy Rich Asians, because that's like my go-to plane movie. I feel like it is for like a lot of girls who like rom-coms. Crazy Rich Asians, great movie if you have a plane ride and you want to watch some romance. But just the first 10 minutes, like being in New York, I was like, gotta mention it, because I love it.
You see, that's not a good plane movie, because you get to see, you know, people flying on a plane in style, you know, going into those.
Oh my gosh, I know. It's like my dream flight.
So I don't know. But okay, I can understand where you were talking about that. All right, that's fine.
But my number five is Ghostbusters, because I love Ghostbusters. I think it's really good. I remember I watched it for the first time back, Dad, when I had that little gray TV in my room. Yes. I saw it for the first time at night. I was like 4 or 5 years old, and it was like on TV. And I remember watching Ghostbusters for the first time. And obviously I've seen it since then, but it's just such a good movie. Obviously the original Ghostbusters.
Is there anything?
Not... Exactly. I don't think we should mention anything else.
No.
All right, Joe.
All right, so this was the hardest one for me, because I literally have over 20 honorable mentions that I whittled down from like 40. Everything from like Where's Papa to Once Upon a Time in America to Godspell to The Hot Rock to a little movie called The Godfather. My number five, it's some little movie by some guy with three names. I don't know.
Yeah.
But my number five was the first film I thought of when I got your email about Fun City Friday. And that is the 1970 original version of The Out-of-Towners. It's not the best movie. I'm sure if I rewatch it today, I would hate it. But it's such a just New York movie, and Jack Lemmon and Elaine May, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah.
They are so great in that. And you can tell Jack Lemmon just hates everything about being in New York. And it's just hysterical. So absolutely love it. Number four, I just switched my three and four as we were doing this. But my number four, I'm going to go with my favorite movie musical, and that is the original West Side Story. That's like a total love letter to New York. And just the whole beginning, dance sequence with the Jets and the Sharks, is like almost unsurpassed for how to open up a musical. So West Side Story, my number four.
All right. Excellent. All right. Cassie, you're up.
My number four is actually Black Swan. I just find that movie, like, I love like psychological horror films like that. I feel like you really get to see a lot of like just like different sides of like humanity in general, but like just Black Swan is like just such a good movie. Like, that's all I could really say. Like, I love it. Like, I feel like it might freak a lot of people out, but like, you know, it's like, that's what happens. Like, when you're in a ballet company like that, and like there's that much pressure, like that happens to people. Like, that's like real. And I feel like that's like a side of like the entertainment. It shows like an interesting side of the entertainment industry, especially like, I feel like for girls, there's definitely a lot more pressure, but like, I just love Black Swan. I think it's great.
Okay.
And this is why we never put her in ballet class.
That's right. I hate that movie, but that's fine.
Really?
Yeah. So hopefully that's not on your list of movies that you think I should be doing minute by minute, because that will not happen.
No, it is not. It is not. Don't worry. Wow. Interesting.
I'm not a fan of Darren Aronofsky. The only movie I like of his is The Wrestler, which I think is amazing. It's like, it's not even that I like it. I love it. But all the others, I don't get the type of stuff that he does. But
He's got some rough stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
Agreed.
All right, Kathy, what's your number three?
So my number three is probably like one of the best rom-coms, at least I feel, and that's How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. I just love that movie. Like, it's the type of movie that I feel like for most girls, like, at least my friends, I don't know, we could watch that movie like over and over, and it's just really good. And I'm not a huge Matthew McConaughey fan, but I will watch How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days.
Hey.
That doesn't mean I have to like his character, but you know, I love it. I love it.
All right. I like it. I think it's fun, but it's not. I wouldn't put it up in the realm of one of the best rom-coms ever. But that's fine. We
that's
are of
okay.
A different generation. It makes sense.
You're like him. You
yes.
love When Harry Met Sally, which you know, that's fair.
Okay. All right, Joe, you're up. Number three.
So number three, I'm going to go with one of my biggest guilty pleasures, and Jay will either be happy or not happy.
Jurassic Park does not take place in New York.
No, I know Jay put it at number one. I don't know if he'd be happy if someone else mentioned it, but that is Daylight.
Yes.
Daylight is not a great film, but oh my God, if it's on and I put it on, I'm done. I have to watch it till the end. It's just so much fun. What a fun movie. It's ridiculous. It's completely unbelievable. But who cares? It's just a fun movie to watch.
Okay.
Daylight, absolutely number three. Number two is the best romantic comedy ever made, and that's When Harry Met Sally.
Never heard of it.
Yeah, I don't need to even say anything about it. It's just so fantastic. There is no rom-com better.
I can't disagree with that one at all.
Yes. Thank you. Yes.
All right.
All right, Cass, number
Cassie,
two.
You're number two.
Right. My number two is Goodfellas, because that's just such, it's amazing. I mean, honestly, anything with Joe Pesci, I love. I love Joe Pesci. I think he's like so adorable. I just want to like stick him in my pocket.
Or
like,
put him in your trunk.
Like, yes. Yeah, but I just Goodfellas, it's like, it's really, it's just amazing. Like, it's so good. And I feel like if it's on, like, I just want to watch it. And
All right.
They filmed part of that was filmed down on this little restaurant on Varick Street that was two blocks from where I worked when I worked at the time for Penguin Books, which was interesting.
Oh wow, very cool.
Yeah.
All right, and Cassie, what is your number one?
All right. So my number one holds a lot of nostalgic value for me. And I feel like it's a very, very underrated Disney movie. It's Oliver and Company. It's about, like, this little cat. And he's, like, nobody adopts him. And it's basically Oliver Twist, essentially.
With Billy Joel.
Okay,
come on. How could that be bad?
Yes, and Billy Joel's in it. He's, like, one of my favorite musicians. Billy Joel's in it. It's so good. Our younger cat, I named him after. I always wanted an orange cat. And so when there was an orange kitten available, I stuck him in a blue collar. And I was like, your name's Oliver. And, you know, and when we brought him home, I made everybody in the house watch the movie, and I held him in my lap, and I was like, Oliver, that's you. That's you, and you're friends with Billy Joel as a dog. And so, yeah, it's such a good movie, and it's so underrated, and I hate that people don't like it, because it's just, I love it. The music is so good. I wish that, like, the album was on Spotify, but it is not. But maybe one day.
All right, what is your number one?
My number one will not be a surprise to you, Rob. That is the taking of Pelham 1-2-3, the original 1974 version.
Not a surprise.
The only version. Yes,
right.
It's just the quintessential 70s New York movie. And if I can just tell one other quick tidbit, it's even... The Taking Pelham 1-2-3 is even mentioned in a Beastie Boys song, the song Sure Shot. In the second verse, they're like, well, it's the taking of the Pelham 1-2-3. If you want a duty rhyme, then come see me. So every time that song comes on, it's like, I must listen to it because I want to hear him say the Taking Pelham 1-2-3. And then right after that, of course, he mentions John Woo. So that's my favorite directors. He's like, I got more action than my man John Woo, and I got mad hits like I was Rod Carew. So, I mean, how can you get a better song that mentions Taking Pelham 1-2-3 and John Woo, greatest song ever written?
Excellent. That's great. All right. Well, thank you both for those lists. That was great. So we will now the final game of Name That Remake. So let's spin the wheel.
Oh, all right.
See what we got.
Let's get this one.
Oh, yeah.
I think we're 3 for 4 so far.
I believe so.
All right.
All right. So this is a movie that originally came out in 1982 and was remade twice, both in 1999 and 2014.
Oh,
oh my God. Is it Annie?
Oh, wow. Very good. Excellent.
Nice.
The 1999 Annie is my favorite Annie. I almost put that on my New York list. It's my favorite Annie.
Awesome.
That is great. You see, now I didn't even have to think about a way to describe it without talking about an orphan and a millionaire and a bald millionaire.
Yeah, I don't think you could. Yeah. Good job, Cassie. Nice.
Thank you. Oh my God, I ended on such a high note with that. No, like the 1999 Annie, best Annie. I will like die saying that. They can remake Annie however many times they want.
Excellent. Nicely done, Cassie.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right. So do either have anything else you want to say about this movie?
Just that it's a lot of fun. And that anybody should watch it.
Anybody, everybody.
I think it's absolutely really good.
Everyone, anyone and everyone and their kids should watch it, and their dogs and their cats. Yeah, you name it. Everybody should watch it.
To Be or Not to Be, starring the famous Polish actor Joseph Turow.
Yes.
Yes.
Everybody should watch both versions of that, too. And, you know, that maybe they'll hire me for some roles. You never know.
Who knows? All right. So, would you both like to, for one final time this week, tell people where they can find you?
All right. Yeah, you can find me on my blog, Von Luger's Butter. And if you don't know where that came from, you're going to have to sit through The Great Escape to figure it out. That's torahfish.wordpress.com. You can also find me on the socials, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and, of course, Letterboxd.
Yep, you could find me on the socials and eventually Letterboxd when I finally get around to it, and hopefully one day on Dad's blog.
Yes, and Marvel University.
Yes, and Marvel University. We both have stuff there.
Yes.
All right, excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Move Around Minute. You can find me on my website, movearoundminute.com. You can send me an email to movearoundminute@movearound.net. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, and you can find me on Instagram. So thank you both for joining me and everyone for this week. It's been a lot of fun for me. I hope you both enjoyed it.
Oh, it's fantastic,
Rob. Yes, it's been awesome. This was so cool.
Yes, thank you so much.
I'm glad we found time that all three of us could record together. So that works too.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Right. Worked out with the schedules. Yes, yeah, really perfect.
Good. Perfect. All right. So I will be back on Monday with a new guest. So everyone have a great weekend. And until then,
Gesundheit.
Gesundheit.